Commentary is for general information purposes only. Clients should seek professional advice for their particular situation.
You gotta actually think, well, Makan is crazy.
According to StatsCan, 18% of Canadians are over the age of 60, and 40% are over the age of 50. And according to an Environics study, on average, half of Canadian financial advisors' clients are retired or near retirement. The financial industry in Canada has been focused for so long on the accumulation phase of a financial plan. But now more than ever, we must focus on the decumulation phase. Today, retirement planning is more challenging than it was even a decade ago. Longer life expectancies, inflation, healthcare costs, and lower fixed income rates are just a few challenges that advisors and their clients face. Personally, I believe it's a combination of lower rates and longer life expectancies that are the biggest challenges. The average life expectancy for Canadians is almost 83, which means the average person that begins retirement at age 65 will spend 18 years in retirement. The current 10-year Government of Canada bond yield of near 3.25% will not be enough to sustain a client through retirement. The Environics study also found that 71% of advisors polled agreed that a significant proportion of their clients are concerned about generating sufficient income in retirement. A product that is focused on generating cash flow for clients using a diversified basket of fixed income and equities is what clients will look for to meet their retirement needs. On today's episode, we are joined by Roshan Thiru, Head of Canadian Fixed Income, to discuss the challenges and opportunities in fixed income today. Listen on. This is Investments Unplugged. Welcome back to Investments Unplugged. Once again, I'm your host, Kevin Hedlund, co-chief investor strategist, Manulife Investment Management. And with me is my co-host, as always, Makan Nia, co-chief investment strategist. Makan, good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Kev.
And today's episode, we have a special guest, Roshan Thiru, head of Canadian Fixed Income and lead portfolio manager for our Manulife Yield Opportunities Fund and Manulife Corporate Bond Fund. Roshan, thanks for joining us.
Gents, as always, a pleasure talking to you, and thanks for having me. And I must say, I'm not feeling so special anymore. You know, it's been a rough ride on the bond side, but hopefully that changes soon.
And that was my first question, Roshan. Given what's going on in the bond market so far this year, how are you feeling? What has gone on? Why are many bond funds negative so far year to date? We're now recording on June 6th, and it's been a tough ride year to date.
I couldn't have said it any better, Kevin, and I couldn't understate the carnage that has actually transpired in the bond market. Maybe I'll start off with a quote from Charles Dickens. You know, he wrote 150 years ago, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times. And it was a spring of hope and it was a winter of despair. You know, that quote that was penned many, many years ago aptly characterizes the current state of fixed income markets, not just in Canada, but in the entire world. And I'll tell you why, because since the pandemic, there has been a drastic loosening of monetary policies, as you know, and fiscal policies. That, combined with the fact there is a war in Ukraine and lockdown in China and supply chain constraints, it's caused inflationary fears, and that has wreaked havoc in the fixed income markets. Just to put things in context for the listeners here, the Canadian fixed income index is down over 10%. The high yield index in the US is down in and around 10%. The blue chip US investment grade index, again, negative double digit returns. Similar story in the emerging markets. Not to belabor the point, but the last point I will make is even the long US treasuries backed by the might and heft of the US government, that's down in and around 25%. So kind of tells you what has transpired, and all because of inflationary fears and the Fed hiking rates.
So, yeah, it seems like the person or the thing to blame is inflation. If we look back on both, whether it's fixed income or equity market carnage, as you've talked about, that's that pesky inflation. And we obviously have our view, and in a nutshell is, yeah, we're probably peaking in current months ahead. And as we go through the second half of this year, inflation will start trending lower. Are we going to be back at pre-COVID levels by the end of the year or even within the next year? No, but we'll be trending in the right direction, and that should be positive for bonds and equities. Now, what's your view in terms of inflation, in terms of how you see this number evolving? And let's focus on the US here over the next year.
The way we look at inflation, Markan, as you know, inflation really hasn't been an issue for the developed world going back three decades. It really hasn't been, right? That's because there are two factors that drive inflation. You have the structural factors, and then you have the cyclical factors. By structural factors, factors that determine long-term growth. So what are they? Demographics, right? So we have gotten older and we continue to get older. Families are smaller and the propensity as a result to consume has come down. Adaptation of technology, right? The advent of computers and internet, that means productivity has gone up, that dampens prices. And similarly, adaptation of technology and globalization, these have all dampened prices and they're going to be there going forward. But since COVID, two things have become omnipresent. Number one, the amount of debt we have piled on, not just in the developed world, but all around the world. Just in advanced economies in China alone, we have added $25 trillion of debt. As you know, debt is deflationary. And the second point I would make is China, that used to prop global inflation going back, you know, the last 15 years, you know, they used to grow at 10, 15%. Now they're going to grow at maybe 3, 4%. So my point is the structural factors that have depressed and dampened inflation going back many years are omnipresent. So what's changed? It's the cyclical factors, right? The war in Ukraine, number one. And number two, because of the pandemic, China lockdown, supply chain constraints, these have all increased fuel cost and commodity cost and anything we import. We still think those are going to be transitory. The point is, what is the transitory period? Maybe 12 to 18 months. So our view is, you know, we think inflation in the US, the headline, the core you are seeing at 6, 6.5%, we think it'll come down to between 3 and 4% over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, Roshan, I think we would agree. You know, it's going to come down. We are seeing our disinflation forces. We've seen some of the impact costs. You know, the rate of change is not going to continue the same pace. Of course, the central banks have started on their rate hike path. The Bank of Canada raising rates 50 basis points last week, Federal Reserve as well a few weeks ago. The expectation is for them to raise another 50 basis points at the next couple of meetings. Seems like the market is pricing in fairly aggressive central bank rate hikes by end of this year to fight this so-called inflation, and they believe they can fight it. What is your view? Do you think the market is overpricing the path higher, or do you think they have it right and the Fed and Bank Canada will go as aggressive as they need to?
Or maybe said differently, do you think that global central banks go the under, go what markets are expecting, or the over?
Under. And then here's why I think that, you know, it's not often that the central banks have gotten it right. But that being said, you know, my view is market, you know, markets always inflate small probabilities. So our view is, you know, central banks, where the overnight rates are headed, I think markets aggressively pricing it. Central banks have three tools in essence, right? Overnight policy rates, they can use forward guidance, and they can use quantitative tightening. And it's not often they use all three of them. They're using all three of them, and forward guidance is they've pretty much told us, you know, till they're going to have 250 basis point hikes till July. I think after that, they're going to wait and see. I think inflation is going to start trending down, and then maybe one or possibly two 25 basis point hikes after. I don't believe in this terminal rate of 3, 3.25%. I think it's just overdone.
And I think I already know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Is do you believe that the fixed income damage has been front-loaded in 2022, or is there still some challenging times ahead, and not over the next couple months, because it's a mug's game, but over the next year? Do you think we've already experienced the majority of the weakness?
I do think that. I do think it's just overdone. Just to give some historical context for the listeners, if today were the last day for the calendar year, this would be the worst return for Canadian and US fixed income markets on record, okay? Going back many, many decades, number one. Number two, the Canadian bond fixed income market has never had back-to-back negative returning years. This would be the first. And finally, even during the financial crisis of 08, 09, of a corporate bond index did not have a negative return. Today, it's down close to 10%. So it tells you the carnage we have had. And the reason why we really like bonds here is if you look at the kind of yields we are getting to invest in blue chip Canadian companies. For example, I can buy a AA rated or single A rated senior most paper of a Canadian bank, unless you argue with me, they're going to go bankrupt. It's north of 4.5% for a 5-year paper. You hold it for 5 years, you're going to lock in a 25% total cumulative return. We haven't seen these yields going back to 2008-09.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I know Kevin and I put together a slide where we look at various fixed income sub-asset classes. So Canadian governments, credit, US, and so on. And you are getting double, and in some cases, triple the yield today that you would have got at the beginning of the year. So what is a function? You always have to be optimistic, right? Have rose-colored glasses. Yes, it's been tough for fixed income. But as a result of going through these headwinds, we also have the opportunity to take advantage of higher yields today.
Yeah, I think that's where we're looking at it right now is Roshan, maybe you can talk about some of the opportunities you're seeing. You know, obviously, the landscape has changed so much since the beginning of the year. And as you said, it's one of the best opportunities you've had in quite some time from fixed income. You know, I've been joking. It's not often you see a fixed income manager excited, but this is the most excited I've seen you in quite some time, as long as I've known you, to be buying bonds and these opportunities that exist. And perhaps maybe talk about some of these opportunities you're seeing.
This is the thing, right? I mean, like I said, I'm obviously, we manage a lot of different subcategories of bonds, high yield bank loans, investment grade corporate bonds being the safer part of that spectrum, right? Higher quality part of that spectrum. Like I said, we just haven't seen these yields going back 12, 13 years, unprecedented, which means it's very forgiving to invest in the asset class.
That's an interesting point.
Exactly. Why do our investors, including us, why do we invest in fixed income? You want income generation and you want capital preservation. And I think it's fair to say since the financial crisis of 08, the income generation component has been missing because yields have been so low. And the capital preservation part, given last year we had a negative return in the index, this year it's negative. You can argue, you know, whether that's there or not. I would say yields are at such good levels. Finally, you can say, the bond yields are at a good level where it can provide a negative correlation to the equity markets, number one. And number two, it's generating solid income for you. We are seeing even in the Canadian investment grade corporates, yields ranging from 4.5% to 6.5%, even 7%. We have senior debt of telecom, you know, long debt yielding, you know, 5.5%, 6%. Just haven't seen it. So my point is, at these levels, it makes sense to invest in fixed income. And here's the thing, right? People say, well, you know, inflation is going through to the moon and so are the rates. Then I ask them the question, if that's the case, you would have to believe the central banks are going to be fighting tooth and nail inflation. If that's the case, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to raise rates to take out future growth. That crimps down on future inflation expectation, which means long bonds are going to do exceptionally well. It's counterintuitive, but it makes sense to buy, even in that circumstance, to buy bonds.
Roshan, you actually just literally took my question, because my question was going to be, is the narrative, and has been the right narrative, is to reduce duration in a rising inflationary environment. But I have to say, over the past couple of weeks with Kevin and I being on the road, that narrative seems to be changing in the way that we're getting questions on, is now a time to actually start increasing duration in our fixed income portfolio. And I would love to get your view on that. Is it too early right now, or is this a second half of 2022 type of story?
I would say it's not early. And I'll tell you what we have done. We came into this year with 2.5-year duration, one of the lowest duration we have had coming into this year. Historically, the lowest we have had. And we increased that duration meaningfully to over 4 years. So it shows you what we think of rates here. And even in our traditional benchmark-centric funds, we were 1 year short early on this year. We are actually gone slightly longer duration at this point. So, you know, we are putting our money where our mouth is, so to speak. At these yields, it's incredibly hard to time the market. But directionally, strategically, as I said, your income generation value proposition has gone up. Capital preservation value proposition has gone up. And if you think long-term inflation is coming down. And if you think terminal rate over the next 12, 18 months is going to be in and around 2.5, why not buy bonds at these levels?
Roshan, I think a lot of investors might not realize the impact of inflation, even taxation on income. You think you're getting a steady stream of income, but don't realize that you're actually eroding your capital, especially from a purchasing power perspective, inflation, and you need that additional income. And regardless of where that comes from, whether it comes from, you know, actual fixing them yield or it's capital gains in a portfolio, it's really total return. And I like to characterize it as cash flow, especially for retirees. I think it's very hard going forward, the amount of Canadians that are in retirement now and will be in retirement over the next 10, 15 years. We've been so focused on accumulation in our portfolios, and we need to focus on decumulation and how to maintain that cash flow in retirement and ideally not outlive our investments. And that's the huge thing. And you talk about the principle being intact. I think that's really the key.
I'll be the first one to say, you know, it's terrible to have negative returns in an asset class, but fixed income in general hasn't been, it's been a bit of a sick asset class. I'm talking generally underlying yields, right? Low yield environment has persisted for so long. In a way, while it's painful to take net capital losses, but from a going forward basis, this is one of the best things that could have happened to the asset class, in that going forward, you're getting some good, perpetually good income generation. And that's what you want to see, right? And that's exactly, so think of it as a sick patient taking very painful medication and the patient just came alive. And that's the story of fixed income. And I think we don't see that yield meaningfully going down going forward.
You talk about risk mitigation, and I think it's important to understand that you're trying to manage the volatility. Of course, we can't control price, and what we've seen recently is you said almost a massive sell-off in bonds, a once in almost a generation. You said it, I think it would be the worst return, calendar year return in history if it ended today. And I think people, especially investors, have to realize that, you know, nothing works 100% all the time. And we characterize fixed income as almost like your umbrella for your portfolio. You know, when it rains, you want that umbrella. Sometimes the storm is so bad that you don't get protected completely, but I'd still rather have an umbrella than not. And I think that's, you know, people talk about bonds are dead and you know, you don't want to need them in a portfolio. And I think every time in my career that people have said, you know, bonds are dead, there's been periods where it hasn't, and you need that in your portfolio from, as you said, both the income generation and the downside protection. Maybe you added that, you know, what are some of the strategies you're employing now? You know, really, where do you think the best bang for your buck is?
So best bang for your buck is not chasing down yield. There's no need. It's omnipresent. If you're a bond PM, you know, almost like a kid in a candy store. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities everywhere. You don't need to chase down yield, number one. Number two, ultimately, listen, you know, volatility is inevitable. It's unavoidable. And the thing is, In a low yielding environment, if we didn't have these periodic volatilities where we can go and buy asset classes at fire sale prices, we won't be able to deliver that return. So volatility is good for us. But that being said, we can't control volatility. So what we do is we buy good companies at great prices. Ultimately, you know, if because of liquidity concerns, whatever, we can't sell that paper, you know, you got a great piece of paper in your hand.
We don't have to reach for yield. And just to think, people say, well, what happened in the first 3-4 months of the year is a new norm for fixed income. If we were on this call 2.5 years ago and I told you that US CPI would be at mid eights, 8.6%, you'd think I was crazy. You would actually think, well, Makan is crazy. But as you pointed out eloquently, is the big structural factors have not gone away. And we will probably revert back to those at some point in the near term. Should we go with the lightning round, Kev?
So Roshan, I know you love these. You've been with us for quite a while in terms of our rapid fire, what we want to learn from you a bit, you know, on a personal level. We already seen, I think, your views on the fixed income level. We know that you were under for the Fed rate hike policies. But one, you know, I love these. This one, the Would You Rather, and one I've asked a few other PMs on podcasts and live is, if you had to give up one of these for the rest of your life, would you rather give up pizza or hamburgers?
Yeah, I gotta give up the hamburgers. My doctor says so.
Because pizza's that much more healthy, right?
It's always relative.
As you can tell, Roshan's not your typical bond manager. He has, and I should be maybe be careful when I say this, but he has a little bit more of a personality than the other ones. Not the ones I made, Eli, per se. But Roshan, going back to young Roshan, what was one of your more memorable summer jobs?
Oh, I worked at a competitor. That was my first summer job ever. And that made me want to be a portfolio manager. So there you have.
Well, that's, now you sound like a typical bond manager with that response.
No, I was lucky. My dad worked at a competitor, and that was the beginning for me. And all I wanted to do was to be a PM.
Interesting. I was going to ask you, what would young Roshan think of you today? And clearly you knew what you wanted to do and are doing it. So that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, but if young Roshan had full information, maybe he wouldn't be so thrilled with what he's doing now.
Roshan, what's your guilty pleasure? It could be food or anything.
Burgers.
That's hilarious. Go ahead, Kev. Sorry.
Outside of investments and on your downtime, what's your favorite way to relax? Is it read? Is it to binge watch? Is it exercise? What do you like to do to when you're not investing?
So I got two little girls at home.
There's no relaxation whatsoever then.
Oh, there's none there. Yeah, you're right. That would not be considered a relaxing activity. So it would have to be YouTube surfing, if you could call it that, aimlessly looking at, I don't know, random stuff. I also watch a lot of Netflix, but I haven't seen a good one in a while.
So, and maybe we'll end off, Kev, with one more question. I know we're all starting to travel more. The queues at the airports are a really good side of that. Once you start traveling again, Roshan, whether it's by yourself or with your family, where's a destination that you would like to go to?
So my wife has made that decision for me. So we are already, we booked to go to Dominican, exactly where Kevin was, when was it, 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago, yeah.
That's right. So that's in August. Hopefully the hurricane doesn't hit fast and furious.
I don't think, obviously you don't want a hurricane. I don't think you care. After being stuck in our homes for years, I think we just want to get out.
Oh, yeah, it's been long-term coming. We had booked twice and we ended up canceling. So hopefully, fingers crossed, gents.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe with that, Roshan, Kevin, I want to thank you on behalf of us. And we know how extremely busy you are. So taking the time out of your busy day to join us for an hour means a lot to us and it means a lot to the listeners. So thank you.
No, this has been fun, gents. And as you know, I always enjoy talking to you. And thank you. And thanks to the listeners as well. Listen, I would say this, right? You know, you can't control what happens short term, but I think you can relatively, you know, directionally get things right long term. From that point of view, bonds make sense. Again, you have to be able to tolerate some volatility, see through the short term, and you'll come out well. That being said, thanks again, everyone, and so long.
With that, thank you to the listeners. Once again, Kevin and I are always very appreciative, and we're always taken back when we go across travel this country and people come up to us saying that they listen to the podcast while they wash their dishes or walk their dog. I'm always surprised to say it's not to fall asleep, but that means a lot to us. So if you like the podcast, don't forget to rate it. That means a lot. It helps us with our rankings and everything. But again, thank you so much for listening. And for that, maybe we'll sign off, Kev. I'm Mark Hania.
And Kevin Helen. Thanks for listening.
See you next time.
Copyright Manulife. Commentary is for general information purposes only and shouldn't be relied on for specific financial, legal, or other advice and does not constitute an offer or an invitation by or on behalf of Manulife Investment Management to any person to buy or sell any security.
Opinions expressed are those of Manulife and or the sub-advisor of Manulife Investment Management and are subject to change based on market and other conditions. Manulife isn't responsible for any losses arising from any use of this information. Manulife funds are managed by Manulife Investment Management Limited, formerly named Manulife Asset Management Limited. Manulife Investment Management is a trade name of Manulife Investment Management Limited. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses all may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read the fund facts and prospectus before investing. Mutual funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. This information does not replace or supersede KYC, know your client, suitability, needs analysis, or any other regulatory requirements.